This is an ABC podcast.
Live across Victoria.
On ABC Listen.
Your smart speaker.
And on your radio.
This is 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
The conversations that are important to you.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Good morning. It's a packed show this morning. A lot of issues bubbling along in your local communities, in the city, the regions and beyond. Some of you will be looking to take advantage of free parking at the footy tonight at the MCG. You might also have to walk past some of your stinking garbage to get there. We've got union action across eight councils in Melbourne and surrounds. It's ramping up. So the footy fans going to the Carlton and Collingwood match might get free parking, although the council is saying, well, they might get some non-union people in, so watch out for that. This is all over council worker pay. How much pain is the strike putting you through? And even if it is, do you stand in solidarity with union workers? Is this the right time to ask for higher wages? Or do you think it's the wrong time? We will talk to the union soon and get the latest on that. Also, a couple of months ago, 774 brought you news of a fight by the community in Macedon Rangers to get some action over a dangerous spot along a big, long road where kids wait for the school bus off to the side, sometimes in the fog during those months, with no protection, no bus stop, with trucks bearing down at high speeds. Something you wouldn't think would need much work to change, but the community has had to work really hard for it. Well, there's an update to that this morning, so stick around for that. That will be with us this hour. Also this hour, what have you sacrificed to afford dental work? Or have you put off the dentist now altogether because of the cost, the pressures you're under? Maybe you've forgone just your annual checkup, but maybe you've even postponed work that you need done. We are talking about dental inequality. It's even more of a pain now, pardon the pun, now that tough times are here to highlight the haves and the have-nots in the world of dental care. It is very skewed. Only a fraction of our professionals are in the public system. So what are the wait times like if you are needing to lean on that public sector? Let's talk about this garbage and parking news that we might be grappling with today. If you're in certain councils, you might have woken up to your garbage not being collected. On the other hand, you might be going to the footy tonight and looking forward to some free parking, because there will be union inspectors who are going off the job about this. Joining me now is Tash Walk, the Victorian Secretary of the Australian Services Union, who can tell you what the lay of the land is today. Hi, Tash.
Good morning, Mary.
Before we get into the whys and the wherefores behind the strike, can you tell us exactly what is happening today across the various councils?
Sure. Look, we've got eight councils who are all bargaining together collectively. So that would be Melbourne, Greater Dandenong, Darebin, Hobsons Bay, Hume, Maribyrnong, Merribeck and Yarra. All of those workers, our members across those eight councils, have various kinds of industrial action that they are participating in. As you flagged, some of that stuff that is happening in parking and in our waste areas is obviously particularly visible, but we've also got lots of action happening in other areas like libraries, everywhere from, you know, ratepayers, all sorts of different areas across council.
So just to zero in on that, the other details, what else? Libraries, what would be affected there?
So people are making sure that they stop and talk to library users about the importance of making sure that wages are sustainable in local government. Our members' wages have been going backwards over time. So we're calling for an increase to try and make up some of that ground. They'll be doing things like putting flyers in books, like stopping and talking to library patrons, doing announcements over loudspeakers, and making sure that the public is aware of what's happening in local government.
And this isn't the first time you've had stoppages. This is, I think, is it the second or third round in this particular action?
In this round of bargaining, action started on the 7th of April. It did kick off with a 24-hour stoppage of waste, of residential waste services and some other groups on that day. That was across Hume, Darebin and Merribeck. But we've had bans on from the 7th of April. So people will start to see visibility about all of the kinds of different important jobs and essential work that local government workers do, and that when that starts getting disrupted, you know, like things start to get impacted pretty quickly.
You're listening to Tash Walk, who is from the Australian Services Union on 774 ABC Melbourne. Steve on text is a bit confused. I obviously didn't frame it right. He says, is the MCG offering free parking? What? No, it's not that, Steve. It's the parking inspectors. Tash, I have read that the council is saying, look, warning fans, there might be non-union inspectors that could be patrolling the area. What do you understand about that? Will there be a group of non-union inspectors rolled out?
Look, only union members can participate in protected industrial action. How councils deal with, you know, work that's not being performed by our members is really up to them. We know that we've got significant, you know, portions of membership who won't be inspecting those streets around the MCG. So, yeah, it's up to punters to make their call, I guess. But, you know, that's what our members are doing.
So, in other words, beware. You could get stung.
That could happen, yeah.
So you're into the second round of this action, Tash. Has there been any movement with the councils in terms of this bargaining?
Not as yet. So it has taken over a year and a half just for our members to get to the table. We had a lot of obstruction from employers for our members to even be able to bargain this way. Everything that they are doing is lawful under the Fair Work Act. They love their jobs. They love serving the community. It's regrettable that we're here. But when you're talking about, you know, waiting this long to get the pay rise that they are asking for, then this is the situation they're in.
Give the pitch to the people as to why they should be supporting this strike action.
So I guess we know that councils and various layers of government can find money for things when they want to. So we know that councillors have recently had a pay increase of up to 20%. Our members are asking for 10% in the first year. This is money that we think that can be found. We know that the state government sees the rate capping policy as a cost of living, you know, kind of relief thing. We don't think that that should be being funded essentially out of our members' wages going backwards. But our members' wages are going backwards 7 to 12% just since 2021. So the kind of claims that we're making are some kind of make-up for that.
I believe you've said that the average council worker earns just $70,000. Is that correct?
That's right, yeah. So we're not talking about highly paid people here, and we're talking about their wages relatively going backwards.
How long will you keep this up?
We will keep this up as long as our members are up for it. So we keep checking in with all of our members. It's about over 2,000 workers across those eight councils. There is a highly consultative kind of process. It's a lawful action that's been authorised by the Fair Work Commission, and we'll keep going as long as they're up for it.
Free parking's one thing, but mounting garbage is another. Are your workers copping some heat as well?
Our members are receiving a mix of feedback. So I think we're getting, obviously, their concerns from people whose waste might be accumulating. We're also hearing quite a bit of support that, you know, people understand that the kind of work that our members perform in waste is really crucial and important, and it's not really visible until they withdraw their labour, which is the only tool that they have to make their point, is to say, well, we're going to start not doing some of our work.
And I guess it's a final question, Tash. How much further will you go? Would we be looking at more than the random streets not being having their garbage collected? Could it get to multiple days or full days?
Look, that'll be something that we keep working with our members on. Our view is that this is firmly in council's hands to come to the table, be prepared for bargaining, rock up having red clauses and that kind of stuff so that we can be working effectively through that process. We think the state government has a role to play in this. Their policies impact local government and their capacity to pay workers, you know, a proper wage. So we need everyone kind of weighing in to solve this. But, you know, we'll keep taking that advice from our members and working with them.
Tash Walk, thanks for your time.
Thanks so much, Mary. Really appreciate your interest.
Tash Walk is Victorian Secretary of the Australian Services Union. What do you think? Ewan from Blackburn South says protests and strikes are always about causing inconvenience in order to get action and change. So asking, is it the right time? Misses the point. Support workers. That's from Ewan. I'm already getting your texts and calls. Coming up in a little bit, we are going to be talking about dental inequality, what you might have had to have been giving up in order to go to the dentist. Maybe you've postponed getting that work done. We're going to be talking about some pretty startling and disturbing new evidence of what we're having to do to counter dental inequality. It's a perennial. Why can't we get this right? This on text about the strikes. How can you not be highly paid at just $70,000 a year? I'm working my bum off for $55,000. That's for that texter. And also, what about the work quality of the council worker in my street? The nature strip trees are trimmed. Three crews came out on three different days and it looked like a mess. Let me know what you think as we go through the morning. Coming up next, we've also been covering over the last couple of months it's the story of a community in the Macedon Ranges that's banded together over a dangerous hotspot. There's been an update in that case.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is the Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
You might remember this story, Three Chain Road intersection in Newham, that's in Macedon Ranges Council, has been the subject of much discussion and a community-led fight. Joining me now to talk about an important update in this is Kerry Ritchie, a Newham resident, full disclosure, also an ABC legend of some time. Kerry, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks, Mary, and thanks for the legend. I don't know about that, but anyway. She's,
look, believe me, everyone, she is. So you're a Newham resident, and just to bring people up to speed, this was, so to speak, this was about a pretty dangerous spot on that road, Three Chain Road.
Yes, we have looked at this intersection for quite a while and just all had huge concerns about it. It's about a minute and a car away from my home. We've all put our children on school buses on that intersection and been very worried because it's a 100-kilometre road and an increasing number of trucks have been taking that road. So we didn't really know what to do, and then there was a number of accidents, and then there was a fatal accident a few months ago, which was a terrible tragedy. So then we got together and really me and two other mothers decided we couldn't put up with this any longer. We were so worried about our kids. We had to do something. So one of the mothers had kept photographs and taken notes of any accidents or near misses at that corner for about 2 years. We got in touch with the council and hadn't had a lot of success. So we decided to call a community meeting and meet at the corner and invited ABC News to come and cover it.
Mm-hmm.
That really helped. We ended up being on the news and luckily had a former Premier, John Brumby, lived in the area, and he was willing, after I spoke to him, to do an interview. And in the end, in the last 24 hours, we've found out that the intersection is going to be reduced from 100 to 80. It's a start. We'd like that whole road reduced to 80 kilometres, but we do have to celebrate this win.
So it's the intersection itself. So I guess for some distance either side of that particular point, it will become 80. Is that right?
Yeah, the whole a 3-kilometre stretch is going to be reduced to 80 kilometres.
Mm-hmm.
So that is an intersecting crossroad. What our main problem was, Mary, was that it is an intersection at the bottom of a hill.
Mm.
It couldn't have been designed more poorly if someone tried. It is also becoming a thoroughfare from Kyneton to Lancefield as trucks try to get across to the Hume from the Calder.
Mm.
And look, you've got kids standing out in the fog. I've sent you a photo, Mary, of
yep.
the fact that we just can't even see our school kids when they're standing out there.
Horrifying. I had to squint to even see the kids.
And look,
and without a bus stop as well, is there any more infrastructure that needs to go around that for the kids?
We've asked for bus stops down there and I really hit a brick wall there. I hate to use that term, but it's feeling like that progress. Bus stops on that 100-kilometre road could even be problematic because the kids won't be able to see what traffic's coming.
Mm.
But we would like some for the children that are off that road and just shelter in when we get, I mean, it rains so much at Hanging Rock. So bus stops is on our list. It just, look, I think what I wanted to say was we really had to take this on as a full-time job in the last few months. it was crazy to think it was that hard to get such an obvious change made. And our council did listen to us. We went, we presented a PowerPoint, we spoke. And look, people are telling us this is a relatively quick result. But it has felt, it's been 2 years of my friend living on that corner keeping documentation, 2 years of running out to accidents to have to pull people out of cars. I just think these country roads are being used like highways. I'm out there a lot on that road, and people are using these country roads like they are freeways, and it is a whole mentality shift that we've got to think about the fact that in that fog, two little children could be huddling on the side of the road.
Yeah,
it's just how important is it to get somewhere fast is what we think. It's I'm not perfect with my driving, but I just, in our area in Hanging Rock with wildlife and children, it's just becoming an actual catastrophe.
And should it take that long?
Yeah.
Kerry Ritchie, you've described, I guess, a textbook case of grassroots pressure. I do see the council has put out a press release talking about its advocacy efforts bearing fruit. And as you say, they have represented you to the Victorian government. But do you think it all should just be a bit easier?
It should be. We had the mayor, Kate, and one of the councillors turn up when we had our gathering. And look, to their credit, they stayed the entire time. And one of them said to us at the end, well, that's been a terrifying morning, hasn't it? And it's just that there's so many of these intersections and there's so many of these roads that I think, look, I feel like there's a lot of attention and money needed. But this one, look, it's a three-chain road. It's children, it's wildlife, and that did count for something in the end. So, look, we are really happy, but we've unfortunately still got a bit more work to do, I think.
Yeah, and I can see on the text line you might be able to put some sort of collective up there for all of the country roads being used like highways.
I know.
Yeah, yes. Good on you, Kerry Ritchie, and your community, and good luck with, I guess, the continuing fight.
Oh, thanks so much, Mary, and thanks for the ABC and the local papers. We have two journalists up locally that kept on checking in with us, and I tell you, there's a fear of the media out there, but I feel it's unjustified. On a local level like this, we would not have had this happen if it hadn't have been for some media support. I really believe that.
Thanks for talking on our behalf, Kerry. I second that. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Mary. Lovely to hear your voice.
And yours too. Kerry Ritchie, Newham resident, as I say, a long-time ABC colleague, and some good news for the people out there in Newham and surrounds. But maybe you also have that experience near you.
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
We are talking dental inequality, and in all my time being a journalist, so it's around about three decades, I think this comes up every single year, multiple times a year. Why haven't we got this right? This from Trevor on text. If you live on a pension, dental care is not even possible. The last time I checked, there were 800 people ahead of me for public dental, almost an 18-month wait. I have to wait until the pain is unbearable, then have the tooth removed as the cheapest option. Is that okay? Are we okay with this situation in Australia? And what can we do? A new survey of more than 900 people found that people have been cutting back on groceries or drawing on their superannuation or flown overseas to get their dental care. And also, on the other hand, more than one in four people, I think over 60, hadn't seen a dentist in over a year. They're putting it off. Elizabeth Devaney is CEO of the Consumer Health Forum, can talk to us about this survey and hopefully some solutions. Thanks for joining us, Elizabeth.
Good morning, Mary.
Trevor's story, how does that strike you?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. So our survey shows that only one in five people said that dental costs were causing no financial strain. Everyone else felt it in some way.
And particularly, I'm gathering then, the older people, that stat of more than a quarter are just putting it off.
Yes, that's right. And also we see that in rural and remote areas too, where up to three in four people are delaying care.
So what did What did the survey find in terms of the things that people were actually sacrificing to afford dental work?
Well, everything really. Skipping meals, deciding not to go out, not turn the heater on, all those kinds of things. And now we'd probably add petrol, because this was before petrol became a major cost driver.
And as I said in my intro, this is a perennial issue. Why is it? I mean, we can all look back and see the policy failures, and there was an idea about denticare, I think it was called at some point, and that sort of died a death. What is behind it in your view in terms of the political will in this area?
Well, dental wasn't included way back when in Medicare. And at the time, the government was pretty clear that it would be too challenging to try and bring both dental and medical care through such a policy change, because you would remember it was very contentious for a number of years. And unfortunately, there's never been the opportunity to bring it in.
You're listening to Elizabeth Devaney from the Consumer Health Forum, and we're talking about dental inequality. What have you sacrificed to afford dental work? Have you put off the dentist altogether, and for how long? Monique, you've called in from Castlemaine. What's your experience in this?
It's always been very difficult to go to the dentist. So I've only ever gone every few years.
Has that led to any bad outcomes?
Well, I've always been lucky enough to have pretty good teeth. So once I didn't go for 7 years, and then for the last 10 years, I've been told I need to get my wisdom teeth removed.
Do you think
I can't afford that. I can't afford to take the time off work.
So what are you going to do?
Well, that's the thing. I am still not going. So I recently was made redundant. I still haven't found regular work, and it's almost been 6 months. And I finally realized that I need my first filling. And I'm 38 years old, so I'm pretty lucky. But yeah. I don't know how I'm going to afford it, because I have a mortgage. I'm struggling to pay my rates. Just the whole thing.
Yeah. Oh, Monique, well, look, congratulations on winning a certain genetic lottery there. But, yeah, thoughts are with you in terms of needing that work and putting it off. Elizabeth, as Monique was speaking, this text came through as well, is why aren't dental costs bulk billed? Is there a short answer to that?
Well, because there's not an item number that I would allow everything to be bulk billed, with an incentive like we currently give GPs to bulk bill.
Is that one of the first things that you'd be asking for?
So we're pretty clear that there's near universal support for change. Over 90% of the people that we surveyed want more public funding for dental care. What we're really asking for are three things. First, invest, and we've proposed $15.7 billion over 4 years, starting with older people and lower income groups. Second, to cut wait times. And third, to fund prevention.
So cutting wait times and funding prevention, and was that first one about direct grants to people?
Well, it's investing in it like we invest in medical care, because your mouth is part of your body, right? But our funding system acts like it's not.
So what would that mean in practice?
So people, and we're suggesting a staged approach, so starting with those groups that we know are really struggling to get care, would be able to get access to free care for their dental needs. That would, of course, reduce the wait list too by providing more funding to state governments to run more public dental, and also make prevention more important too, because obviously prevention is better than care. You don't want to get a filling, you want to not need one.
Well, along those lines, this text, it's horrible for adults not to be able to afford this, but kids, they have no choice. It's not fair. There'd be some logic, wouldn't there, Elizabeth, to prioritising dental care for kids and making that affordable in line with this push for prevention?
Absolutely. There is currently a national scheme for child dental care. Unfortunately, only about one in two people who are eligible to use it do. So
why
is
that?
Really important too. People don't know about it.
Right. So what should they be looking for? What are we looking for?
Yeah, there is a child dental benefit scheme. I'm sure if you put that into Google, it'll light up for you. And people do get sent letters, but sometimes letters from the government don't get opened or get lost. You can ask your dentist about it too.
Who is eligible?
It's basically people on lower income again, and it's determined, I think from memory, through the ATO with, you know, Family Tax Benefit A and Family Tax Benefit B and so on. But if you're on a lower income, it's highly likely you're able to get access to this, so it's worth checking out.
Well, that is good news among all of the bad news, Elizabeth, so I'm really glad we can tease that out. Deb, you've called in from Ormond. What would you like to say?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I'm a social worker. I've worked with unhoused communities and rough sleepers and for 20-plus years, and the consequence of poor dental health and a lack of dental services impacts people in every facet of their life. Their capacity to move into education, to engage in community, their physical, mental, social, emotional health. And if we look at it purely from a financial perspective, if you give people access to dental services, you reduce the long-term health consequences significantly. And it's a real tragedy to watch people suffer and not be able to access what they need.
And so, Deb, I'm taking that you've seen the suffering, not just physically, but as you say, the mental effect that has on the rest of their lives.
Yes, absolutely. And it's long-term and it's consequential and it's multi-layered and it's heartbreaking to watch people suffer like that.
Deb, before I let you go, and thank you so much for your call, as a social worker, I'm keen to put this to you, this on text. If people lived within their means and saved money, then dental wouldn't be a problem. What would you have to say to that person?
Well, I think that's a very simplistic view of how our world works and disadvantage and trauma and, you know, living within your means when you're facing barriers to access basic necessities is a really, in my lens, a simplistic way of looking at the world.
Yeah. Deb, thank you so much for calling in. It's really important to hear from people who are dealing with those people on the front lines. Elizabeth, we're also getting some texts. I can see suggestions saying, look, swap something out of the NDIS budget. We should be swapping out other things in order to fund this. We are talking at a time when governments are under, you know, pressure, when the cost of living is rising. How do you make this pitch to government to put money into dental care?
Well, we're not saving money by not putting it in now, because delayed dental care doesn't save money. It makes things worse and more expensive later.
This also on text, I just want to run it past you. Shane is saying all state school students are eligible for dental through integrated health units at local public hospitals and don't need to be low income or have a healthcare card, just a state school student. Is that correct?
I think it varies from state to state.
Mm. Right, so check that up. But yeah, obviously for the kids, yeah, there's been some spotlight, some action, but it's for the older people as well that you're talking about getting a specific scheme for older people.
Yes, so as we've said, there is some things available for younger people, but nothing really for older people, which is why you see that coming up very strongly in our survey.
Mm. You've talked about a senior dental benefits scheme. Does it need to be part of Medicare?
No, not at all. It just needs to be a way that the services can be funded to deliver that care. And right now, healthcare is funded in a variety of different ways. The community doesn't care about technically how it's done. They want to know that they can get care. When we've got a system where people wait or worry or go without, then we're not going to get good health outcomes.
You're listening to Elizabeth Devaney from the Consumer Health Forum. We're talking about dental inequality. Seems to be a perennial issue. And what is the answer? So many of us are not going to the dentist, or sacrificing things like groceries is part of the survey that the Consumer Health Forum put together. Where are you getting with your push with this, Elizabeth? Do you have any meetings lined up? Are you finding that there's any meetings being taken? We know that already the federal government will probably have had its federal budget put together by now. You're calling for movement in this budget. Are you optimistic?
Well, I think we're probably at the end of a very long queue, to be honest, right now. But we did put this in our submission to the government around the budget both this year and last year. And we're part of a broader national oral health alliance, which has for a number of years been saying the same things. Sooner or later, we hope someone hears us and acts.
Yeah. Gaia has called in, and you're a dental practice owner. Is that right, Gaia? What are you seeing?
Hi, I'm Mary. I see a lot of people who are in the same situation that you're talking about, and it is very heartbreaking. And we have a small dental practice in Bundoora, and it's devastating to hear that from people. What I would recommend to I've just walked in the door and the dog's
no
going
problem.
Crazy. shop around if you can and try and get some quotes to get you a better deal.
Does that yield results, that there is that much difference potentially between people?
So. That's what people have said to me. Mm-hmm. Only because obviously certain operational costs are different for different businesses. So they might be able to find a better deal somewhere else. But also, I guess the issue I find as a practice manager is, and an owner, is not necessarily just that that there's a cost here. It's also about the education and the importance of investing in prevention work, and as your guest has been talking there as well. But in terms of operating these businesses, I've been having major conversations this week with service providers, and you know, we deal with anti-competitive kind of issues here in terms of who we can go to service our equipments and instruments and things like that, which we need to maintain to be able to provide the kind of care that.
So there's only a few suppliers of those, and those prices are pretty standard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in Victoria, we, for example, only have two key providers who can service our autoclaves machines, and so you know that then puts pressure. Like if I'm paying $1,000 to service machine every 12 months, it makes it a bit more difficult in terms of keeping those costs lower.
Yeah. While I've got you on the phone, there is that flavour coming through the text as well about dentists driving luxury cars and, you know, the prices being so high. You've pointed to the overheads here. Also, we've seen in this survey that some people are heading overseas, presumably because of the cost. How do you respond to people who believe that, and also people who are reacting by going overseas?
Yeah, I mean, the overseas, people who go overseas do that, and I understand why they, you know, do it. There are risks involved. I'm not a dentist, but I'm sure if you speak to the dental profession, they would also advise against those types of things, because what we get is people go and do a crown and, you know, or a root canal overseas. For us to be able to do it properly and for it to heal, you need to allow at least 4 weeks. And so unless you're there for, you know, months on end and getting a proper clean out of the infections and doing all the work properly, allowing the time for it to heal, a rush job overseas isn't going to help you save money when you get back home.
Yeah.
Because if there's anything wrong with it, you're not going to be able to go back and get that stuff sorted out.
That's right. You're going to have to go to someone local anyway. Gaia, thank you so much for calling in. It's really interesting to get the perspective of a dental practice owner as we talk about this. I also still have on the line Elizabeth Devaney, who's the CEO of Consumer Health Forum. And before I let you go, Elizabeth, we are getting a lot of texts along the lines of the whole system being in disarray. And waiting lists are years long. What should people do? We had some advice there from Gaia, but what do you believe, if people listening should do if they're in a conundrum about the needs versus the costs?
Yeah, if you can, don't wait till it's urgent. Do ask about options. We really would encourage dentists to be upfront about costs. People are still getting bill shock. And there are sometimes government programs through community health. I mentioned the child dental benefit. So maybe ask your GP or somebody else that can help you navigate to potentially a free service.
Elizabeth Devaney, good luck with all of your work.
Thanks, Mary.
That's Dr. Elizabeth Devaney, who is the CEO of Consumer Health Forum. What about a sugar tax to fund the dental work? That on text, that's clever. Another suggestion from Jack in Wodonga. Mary, with a resource tax on gas exports, dental care plus many other needs could be well met. It's combining a couple of issues we're dealing with at the moment, isn't it? MM in Castlemaine is talking about only going to the dentist every few years and didn't go for 7 years once. Also, a sole parent who can't go to afford orthodontist work for the son due to family violence, so it's just not worth it. And I have to wait for a new financial year as I'm a cleaner on a low wage. A very pervasive issue there. And thank you so much for everybody who has been leaning in. I'll get to more of your texts if we've got time in this hour as well. It's 11 minutes to 12, though, and coming up is a pretty interesting conversation. Does AI know you better than you know yourself? My next guest is a clinician who can see great promise in AI getting all of our information as we ask them questions, our chatbots reflect back to us, potentially who we are. Have you found that you're using AI, and maybe you're keeping things back for this reason, but if over time you're giving it some details about yourself and it's spitting it back at you, is it changing how you see yourself?
On 774 ABC Melbourne and ABC Victoria.
This is The Conversation Hour.
You're with Mary Guerin.
Well, joining me now is Dr. Grant Blaschke, the Associate Professor at the University of Melbourne and co-author of the book AI for Better or Worse. And I believe he sees both sides of it. Let's talk about it. Grant Blaschke, thank you for joining me.
Great to speak, Mary. And just a quick note on your dental interview. I really enjoyed it. As a GP, we're so often left in a bit of a holding pattern for people with pain relief and waiting and trying to get them on the list. So great that you're talking about that. But to AI, as we know, so many of us are using it. 50% of Australians use AI regularly, which is up from 38% in 2023. So we know that. But what's changed is the scale of the memory in the thing. So I like to think of it a bit like we've gone from having the memory of a goldfish to suddenly having Einstein's memory. So to put numbers on it, it used to be able to remember about a page of information about you. Now it can have something like 10 novels worth of information about you.
Of course, it depends on how much you're choosing to share with your bot, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Well, a couple of things have happened. First of all, this idea of what they call persistent memory, where it's remembering what you chatted about with it previously, is often on as a default with a lot of the AI models now. And it's a little bit like having a little man walking around behind you with a clipboard and a pen, writing down everything you say or type, and then coming back at you later. I actually found it as a GP. I asked it the other day, I go, you know, what do you think about this rash in this kid? And said, oh, were you asking about your patient or your grandchild? I'm like, sorry.
Yeah.
This thing is actually sort of starting to get to know us a bit, and that's why I wrote about it.
So we are talking to Dr. Grant Blaschke about the power of AI to reflect ourselves back to ourselves and what that actually means for us in the longer term. I'll go back to a couple of things that you said there, this idea of that it's almost second-guessing what you're saying. I've put in hypotheticals into my chatbot about, oh, a woman needs this and a woman needs that, and the chatbot says, are you sure you're not talking about yourself? Which is rather disconcerting. apart from anything else, there's the privacy aspect, but what... Let's talk about the upsides that you see. As a clinician, you're talking about a repository of facts, if you like, and an LLM, a large language model algorithm that sees patterns, so effectively does a little bit of the work for you as a GP. Is that right? And could that help anybody who's in fact asking medical questions at home?
Look, I think there's a long discussion about the benefits of AI and how it can be helpful with healthcare, and it can give you suggestions. But of course, you know, a bit of a caveat, especially at the moment, is make sure you ask your doctor. Don't fully rely on it. It can be wrong. It can be biased if it's trained on, you know, biased training sets. It might not know about your culture or your particular background. So don't take it as gospel, but it can give people ideas about health issues. And in fact, it does. And even as a GP, I'm using AI to have a medical scribe, which actually makes my notes and is saving me a lot of time and effort. So I'm not a Luddite about it. I think there's great things with AI. But this issue about personal profile, so it can...
The philosophical aspects of it, when a chatbot is reflecting you back to yourself.
Yeah, you know how I think about it? It's a little bit like that fairy tale mirror that goes, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's in this land is the fairest of all? And then it'll tell you how fair you are and how great your ideas are.
But the analogy with that would be that it would never tell the evil queen that Snow White was, in fact, better looking, because our chatbots are too obsequious, aren't they?
That's right.
We wouldn't have even had a fairy tale.
Use is sycophancy, right? Which I weird word, but it sucks up to you, right? And they've actually done studies on this. So AI will generally endorse the user's position 49% more than a human would. And studies show that when it is being sycophantic, the users get more convinced they're right, trust the AI more, and they're more likely to keep using it.
So what does that mean long term? Do we become more set in our ways? Do we become less open to argument? Argument in the classical sense.
Yeah, I think the friction in our genuine human communications is really important. People push back on you. You suggest something and they go, no, that's a terrible idea, Dr. Grant. You know, so I think that we lose something there. I also find that as people are using it now for personal communications like emails or even, you know, wedding speeches and obituaries, it feels like we're losing something of our humanity. So yes, the grammar's perfect and there's all these clever words, but has it somehow lost that sense of feeling that's so much about being a human being?
In fact, it goes down to, are we outsourcing reflection? Are we outsourcing philosophy? Do you believe that fewer people are looking inward because of AI bots?
Well, the example that I had is many people who use ChatGPT would have got that, what they call ChatGPT wrapped, at just around Christmas time last year, where it summarised back your main themes and it even gave you a bit of an AI digital image about who you are and what your themes are. And
that's,
I guess what I would be saying to people is take these reflections with a grain of salt. We're much more than the sum of our social media posts and our AI chats. And I'm trying to keep AI out of my intimate communications and speeches and things, because I think your friends and families want the authentic you and really appreciate the real emotion rather than a really shiny but sort of false-feeling AI text.
Oh, indeed. And you talked about the writing being good. To be honest, I feel it's terrible and it's got some really weird kinks in it. Now I can see AI slop everywhere. But yes, the idea that we can actually, I think, really at our guts know what's real and what isn't if something has come out of AI.
Yeah, the other thing that happens in terms of sort of self is what I call the illusion of competence. And I've had it where, you know, the AI's helped me write something and I go, gee, I'm smart. Gee, I'm good. and then you actually sort of get seduced by it and think you're smarter than you are. And they've done studies of this. They did a study with some law students who were sitting the admissions test, and the more they used AI, the smarter they thought they were. And they sort of conveniently forgot how much the AI had actually helped them. So it's part of a broader thing we need to do. As AI is arriving, we want to keep Australians, and particularly our young people, pretty savvy and literate about what the AI is good at.
Indeed, and look back to that fairy tale and make sure that you don't ask the mirror on the wall, which in this case is in your computer. Grant Blaschke, thank you for joining us for an interesting discussion.
Great to chat, Mary.
That's Dr. Grant Blaschke. He's also the co-author of the book AI for Better or Worse. Susan in Mount Wallace says, makes me so glad I never use AI. Thank you so much for joining me today. Really interesting. Still getting texts about those dental costs, which are truly frightening. Should dig into that. Oh, goodness gracious, that's not a pun I meant to make. About that on another topic. Any other topics, write to me, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Have a great rest of day. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.